Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome. We're on episode number
106.
We're nuts.
We crack up because our producer is a very creative artist, and all the time he makes little sketches personalized to each episode that just crack us up. So we look to see what's the episode number because we can't get it together, and we see his little surprise.
I never know what the episode number is until he holds up his iPad.
Literally.
If he didn't hold up the number, say your name, all these things, we'd be like,
What? Line? Line? Oh, by the way, my name is Shamasahita.
My name is Frida.
I forgot about that already. My name is Shamali.
Yes. And thank you so much for listening to the Bhagavad Gita in our book club. We are on chapter 13, and we are in the middle of a giant text 8 to 12. But I think we finished kind of like, if we were going to gauge it, 8 to 10. So yeah. We're going to continue on this giant text. Again, we were talking about all of the beautiful qualities that allow us to be in knowledge, right? And so it was the long laundry list of items. Do we want to go quickly, like windmill around?
Oh, I love it. But also, I mean, before we do that, the previous one was talking about
The things. 6-7, yeah.
No, that's okay. We did a lot actually in the last episode, and we talked a little bit about like the elements that make up our bodies and also like make all of material existence, if that makes sense.
It's like if we were disassembled in Legos or an IKEA IKEA cabinet, right? It's like, what is everything made up of? Krishna is giving us all of the building blocks.
All
of
the 24 elements.
Yes. Right.
Very cool stuff. Okay, yes. Let's go on to the qualities that, what did you say that they are?
They're in knowledge. Like we're cultivating devotional service, but also helping us be in more knowledge and understanding of the truth.
Love
All
it.
Right. Humility.
Pridelessness.
Nonviolence.
Tolerance.
Simplicity.
Approaching a bona fide spiritual master.
Cleanliness.
Steadiness.
Self-control.
Renunciation of the objects of sense gratification.
Absence of false of ego.
That's all we covered for last episode.
Nice.
And then we'll cover the next laundry list in this episode.
Amazing.
Beautiful.
Okay. Let's do it. Shall we read the text one more time?
Maybe go to the invocation, please, ladies.
Oh my God, I swear.
But you know, you would think that after 106 episodes, we would have like figured out exactly what the protocol is.
You know what it is? I think we're just really excited to get into
it. Yeah. Yeah. I forget my name all the time. We forget what episode we're on. The invocation.
We approach it as if it's new every single time.
Basically, we're just so excited.
We're just so excited to be with y'all that we lose ourselves. We're Delulu. We're
lose yourself in the music, the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Invocation, please, ladies.
Om Ajnanate Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. Mm-hmm. All right. So we started that laundry list. Do you want to read the rest of it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Of the items in knowledge.
I'm just trying to figure out where we left off. Oh, interesting. So the next item is the perception of evil, of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and rest, and even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to Krishna, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these Krishna declares to be knowledge. And besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance.
Mm. Ooh. So these are the qualities that we should cultivate to be in knowledge.
And what does knowledge mean? Didn't we say it in the previous one?
It's a full understanding of the soul, the body, and the supreme.
Wow. Ooh, aced it. Yes. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Nice. Stuck the landing.
Stuck the landing.
Yeah. So good, Priya.
Very good. And Priya, you made an important point last time that this whole list everything will fall into place naturally when you chant Hare Krishna, because we might think, oh my gosh, what a daunting list. I might have a few of these, but others seem hard. Don't worry about the individual things. Just try to elevate your consciousness. It's like I've said before, pouring clean water into a cup of dirty water. You just pour more good and then everything else will sort itself out.
Yeah, exactly. And not just chanting Hare Krishna, although that is the means for attaining Krishna in this lifetime and in Kali Yuga in general, but also like specifically Prabhupada says, unalloyed devotional service to the Lord, right? It's really just like Krishna is our everything.
Yeah.
Once we fully realize that, we might have that feeling in our heart, but then it's also like how our actions follow through with that.
Yeah.
All right. So the last one we left off with was false ego. We talked about false ego. Mm-hmm. The next one is the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. Mm. What does that mean? So Prabhupada writes, one should try to understand the distress of accepting birth, death, old age, and disease. So in the Bhagavatam, like this is the wisdom of the sages go through the entire Bhagavatam. There is a lot of descriptions. And my mom used to talk about this a lot. When a child is in the womb, it's actually like suffering so much.
Right.
And it's like praying to get out of that suffering. Like you're surrounded by all these digestive juices and it's not like a very comfortable place for a baby actually. And you're praying and you're praying and you're praying to get out of it. So we have to remember, Prabhupada says, it should be thoroughly understood that birth is distressful. But we forget how much distress we have suffered within the womb of the mother. We do not make any solution to the repetition of birth and death. So being born is actually not fun, essentially. And then similarly, at the time of death, there are all kinds of suffering, which, you know,
makes sense.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that should also be.
Should we talk about that in terms of like, oh, so there's like the pain of maybe the physical health being there. Like, you know, you're suffering from whatever disease or something. Mm-hmm. You can also be suffering from like attachment to people. Like, oh, I'm leaving. What are they going to do? Are they going to be okay? Like, am I, you know, whatever that kind of suffering. What other kinds of sufferings?
Also the suffering of the people that you leave behind too, right? Like they're also in distress. There's just so much suffering around death.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think like I was doing a little bit of research onto like what actually happens when the soul leaves the body, right? And you know, there's like the Krishna conscious version where if that person has dedicated her life to Krishna, they go to Krishna. But what if they haven't, right? Like the soul lingers around for 12 days. Like, you know,
but that's Vedas or like,
it's,
you know,
in the Vedas.
Okay.
Yes. It's in the Garuda Purana.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, literally like that soul leaves the body. It like hovers. Then there are some people who have actually like have lost consciousness and gained consciousness again, but they've actually have encounters of people in hospitals where once they've lost consciousness, they've seen themselves hover above the body, which is so wild. Like they've actually like went into soul level and looked down and they saw their body. Eventually they got revived and their soul swooped back into the body. But when you're like actually dead, the soul leaves the body and then hovers in the air and sticks around for 12 days actually. Mm. And it actually sticks around and lingers above the things that it was attached to in this lifetime. So whether it was their children or whether it was their spouse or their family members or their workplace, if they were super attached to work, even like financial institutions, like their bank, like it was like a millionaire or a billionaire. If they were attached to money, like they're trying to see who's going in and out of the bank to take their money, right? Whatever they were so attached to in this lifetime, they linger around that for 12 days before their next destination or whatever. But it's like, yeah, it's crazy because also in the first 1 to 3 days, the soul actually suffers where it's like so confused that it actually has died and it looks down and it's like, it's so confused and so much in distress that it actually has left its body, which is so wild.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about this when you were describing when we were driving back from one of the kirtans at our friend's house, and she was describing this whole in the Garuda Purana. It describes that the soul lingers, then it has to go on this super like arduous, difficult, strenuous journey to all these different things. But I think a very hopeful note is to think that that doesn't apply to Krishna's devotees, who he takes more personalized care of. And I know it does say that somewhere in the Garuda Purana. Yep. So in the Gita and the Puranas, there's always like, but then this is the path of the devotee. Like there's always, I don't know, exceptions yeah. when you're on the path of devotion.
I think what the point of the Prabhupada is trying to make is that like birth is suffering. Yeah. Death is also suffering. Old age is suffering when yeah. our joints are not working. We have diseases, suffering. So everyone gets practical experience of this suffering, yeah. right? No one wants to be diseased. No one wants to become old, but there's no avoiding these things, right?
Yeah.
And so we need to understand that, and this is the most important kicker, like considering the distresses of birth, death, old, and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life if we don't consider these things, right? It's right. like that wake-up call that you were talking totally. About. These things in life should be a wake-up call. Birth, death, old age, and disease should be that urgency. When we see someone die around us, that should be that urgency. When we ourselves are in a debilitated state or we're getting older, that should be our wake-up call. All of these things should be a wake-up call.
Absolutely.
I love that you just read the last part of that sentence, but I actually think it's like very interesting sentence how Prabhupada wrote, unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life, considering the distress of birth, death, old age, and disease, there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. And I can kind of understand that, right? Because if someone's like, you know, YOLO, you only live once, and they're like very like, whatever, we just gotta live life, then there's no real like consciousness to move forward and make progress, because it's like, nah, I'll just do whatever and there's only one life. But if there's like a, no, this is like serious, like this life, there's suffering, I don't want to suffer, like my god, I gotta, then you can really decide, okay, what can I do to not suffer? What can I do to not, you know?
And then you're like, again, I have to be born. Again, I have to get old. Again, I have to have disease. Again, I have to die. Yeah. I don't want to do this again and again. Have you ever meet someone where you're like, oh, or like someone's like, oh man, I feel like I've been doing this stuff for a while. Like an old soul. Mm. I feel like that sometimes where I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to do this again. Yeah. And like be back in this rat race and blah, 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 go over and over, birth, death, birth, death, birth, death.
Yeah, my mom always says that these sufferings in our life are reminders that we don't belong here. We're just passing by. And even, it doesn't have to be something so tragic. The other day I had a long day of just adulting and just errands. I was running. By the end of the day, I told my mom, I'm so just frustrated. It was a day of productive stuff, but no joy. And she's like, even those can be good reminders. We don't belong here. Like, thanks. Wow. It's true.
That's true.
Today stunk.
I love your mom, man. She is a wise soul.
She is a wise soul.
Very grounded.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
All right. Well, that's my spiel. So who's next?
That was very good.
Great summaries. Yeah.
Thank you.
If you're listening to this episode, the last episode, you'll notice a different format. It was so long, 8 through whatever 12, it was, 12, that we chunked it and we each tackled pages. Those were really good summaries, ladies.
Thank you.
Good.
Beautiful. Go for it, Shyamali.
I'm delaying the process of being summarized.
We'll help you out. We'll help you out whenever you need to.
Basically, the next part is kind of twofold. It's on one hand, you have detachment, and then he kind of elaborates freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. That might sound a little harsh at first. When you first read that, it's like, wow, okay. But Prabhupada even says, okay, as for attachment or detachment from home life, which will include your partner, children, whatever it is, he says it doesn't mean that one won't have feelings for these things, your family, you love them, of course. It's a natural object of affection. Prabhupada even says that. But the thing is, are they favorable for my spiritual progress or not? And that determines how attached should we be to them.
That's so cool. I love that particular phrasing, because I think it might, in general, like I was always taught about like detaching, like not getting too attached to people, not getting too attached. And I being like, I grew up in a very loving family with very close relationships. And so it's like, I never really practiced that so much of like, I'm not going to be attached to my siblings or I'm not going to be attached to, I never really put that into practice actually. But it's saying here, like, as long as these are spiritual, like favorable for spiritual progress, like attachment is perfectly fine. And that just like gives me so much like love and hope and everything. Cause it's like, I feel like I'm attached to y'all. I'm attached to my partner and my siblings. And like, I'm connected in devotional service with all of these, you know, people. So it's like lovely to know that there's a bit of an exception. It's not like you have to be like alone in a corner.
Totally. Absolutely. Like different spiritual masters have said, if I think of any of my God brothers at the time of death, I'm probably going to a nice destination. They're attached to the people who inspire them. And Prabhupada is even giving kind of a little leeway here of like, let's say a lot of people have family who they're not devotees. It's okay to love them. You're going to naturally feel that connection to them, but maybe also don't absorb all of their habits, their influences, their thoughts,
their
right?
Consciousness.
Exactly. We can give our association, but maybe don't take in there so deeply.
Mm. Yeah. Don't be influenced. Probably.
Exactly.
That's real though, because like outside of this.
Sorry. I just threw in a nugget for Shyamalan.
Outside of this like bubble of Krishna consciousness, there is so much of the material world that we have to engage with. We have to drive down the highway. We have to go to work. There's so much. And so like, that's like so hard sometimes where it's like, don't absorb that association when it's like 99% of our life sometimes or like less, hopefully less.
Right. So I love that he almost gives like a sliding scale, like wonderful. If they're spiritual, awesome. Take it in. If they're not spiritual, sure, it's natural to feel that connection, but don't absorb their associations. We're trying to think of things in terms of favorable or not to our spiritual progress. And you see many spiritual masters also who have elderly parents who are alive that I've seen them lead by example of, they're still going to take care of their elderly parents, for example. They'll give their association. They don't just take it in. Then Prabhupada gives kind of a recipe for like, how to spiritualize your home. Because let's say you yourself are very fired up. Maybe your family isn't. Try to mold your family life to give them inspiration then. Prabhupada says the best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. Because if one's in full Krishna consciousness, he can make his home very happy. He made it so simple, Prabhupada. It's like, KC, Krishna consciousness equals happiness. It's a very easy process.
It's a simple equation.
Yeah, it's just a simple equation. So he says one should then try to train the members in his family in this way. They can, he gives examples. The family members can sit down in the mornings and evenings and chant together. You can do these things that will uplift you and try to bring everyone along.
Wow. So, I love that.
Yeah.
So what are these four principles that he was saying that you can do with your family?
Right. Well, he starts off with saying, number one, you can chant. Is that the part that you're looking at?
I thought I heard you mention something about these four things that will make one happy. So chant in the morning and evening.
Yes. So chant Hare Krishna, then accept remnants of prasadam. So like basically spiritualize your food, offer it to Krishna.
Okay.
Have some discussions on the books like the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, here we are. Heyo. And the fourth one would be engage oneself in deity worship. So let's say you're a working person. You can't make it to the temple all the time. You have a little corner of your house that's an altar, a place where you can cultivate thinking of Krishna. So when I'm on my walk, I see a flower, I'll pick it up for my altar. It spiritualizes everything.
Love that.
Put Krishna at the center.
So sweet.
Yeah. Do you guys do anything with your families that like you kind of spiritualize the environment?
Yeah. I think offering food. That's a big part of it. Even just doing Nishinga prayers together in the morning. I mean, we're trying our best. I mean,
yeah. It's not that sweet.
What do you do, Shyamalan?
Yeah, just, it's in the little things. Like I mentioned the last episode that I'm valuing so much knowing what happened to our friend, how fleeting life is. My mom always and I always go on japa walks. So I'm extra trying to savor them. Mm. Like I'll look at her and think, how grateful am I to be able to share this? My dad was in town recently. We all went, my mom, dad, and I on a japa walk around the bluffs, which are like the cliffs overlooking the ocean. It was beautiful. And then on the way back, I picked some flowers to put on our altar. And I remembered how my spiritual master always said, if you're feeling dry in your spiritual life, do something inspiring, something that'll reconnect you, that'll excite you. So whatever you can do for Krishna, do it.
Yeah. Oh, so, I love that.
Yeah. Things like that.
I also liked, it's like when I'm at the grocery store, I don't go on an empty stomach because then I'll buy food for me. But then I always try to go when I'm like, my stomach is full and I'm like, what would Krishna want to eat this week?
Oh, that's so lovely.
Yeah. So it's just like changing the consciousness. It's like, oh, what would Krishna want? Oh, would he? Oh, these flowers on sale. Do you think Krishna would like these? Still trying to watch the wallet, but you know what
that's
I mean?
Good,
like,
nice.
Do you think Krishna would like these flowers that are on sale?
Trader Joe's is a great place.
Trader Joe's?
Flowers for Krishna.
Very sweet. Very sweet. And Prabhupada really emphasizes that we must really sacrifice or get to the point where it comes naturally that we want to sacrifice everything to realize or serve. I like those two words because we have to come to realize Krishna, to really know him. That's a That's not a big or not a little thing. Mm. And to serve Krishna, just as Arjuna did. He puts, Arjuna didn't want to kill and go up against his family members. But when he finally understood that, okay, these family members were actually corrupt, cruel, they were impediments to his own Krishna conscious realizations, then he accepted Lord Krishna's instructions and fought. Mm. So Arjuna gave up everything. So when we can get to that point of like our whole, Krishna is our compass for everything, then we're doing pretty well.
Yeah, I think it's important to realize the stumbling blocks or the impediments to our own Krishna conscious journey. Like, what can they potentially be? It's like, oh, I don't have time in the mornings. What can we do about that? It's like, oh, like I don't have, maybe I can't go to the temple this day. Okay, that's fine. Like, what else can you do, right?
Or maybe I can't cook. Just offer dry fruits.
Yeah. Maybe I can't cook. Just offer a prepackaged, or, you know, you can buy them at Trader Joe's, you know? You can buy dry fruits at Trader Joe's and offer it, right? And like, what else does Krishna want? Water. You have water, right? In the house, right? You definitely should have water in the house. It's like, what can you do? It's like, okay, you can offer water. And like, he doesn't care. He doesn't want the fanciest. Like, we were going through the farmer's market today, and there were these like $45 grapes that were from Japan. Yeah. And I was like, Krishna's not asking for $45 grapes. You know what I mean? He literally just wants like an apple or a banana or a water or a flower or literally a leaf, which that you can get outside. You know what I mean? And so like really just like take a look and like, okay, what can I do? Instead of, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. But like, what can I do? And all of these things so free.
Totally.
Just love in your heart is all Krishna
wants.
That's
so cute.
Yeah.
Even the leaf.
It's a leaf.
That's so true. I've always heard that verse and I've never thought like, let me offer Krishna a leaf. But like he said, even a leaf.
Yeah. Even a leaf. Literally free outside.
Wow.
Water free, mostly in the house. You know?
So sweet.
Yeah. What can we do?
Well, unless there's anything else, the next bullet point on the checklist is even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. So we've talked about this so often. Basically, Prabhupada writes that happiness and distress are factors that are constantly associated with the material life. And we should learn to be tolerant because we can never restrict the coming and going of happiness and distress. So we shouldn't be so attached to the way things are. We should be a little more detached from the materialistic way of life. And Prabhupada says, obviously try to be equipoised in both cases. And this next line I think is a big one. So he says, if we're actually in the spiritual position, then things will not agitate us. What a big statement is that?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah. If we are actually in the spiritual position, things will not agitate us. And to reach that stage with that, that can feel like, whoa, because something will bother us at some point, like it or not. But to reach that stage, we have to practice unbreakable devotional service. And there, to me, the word unbreakable stood out because we've talked about constant, steady, consistent, determined, unalloyed.
Oh, I have a story about that. Like this is like, because like the death of our friend is so recent and it's all on our minds, at least for the last couple of weeks, it has been like, even mindedness and pleasant and amid pleasant and unpleasant events, like death is a super unpleasant event, right? And so I remember like the day that he died, we came home from the hospital and we were all sitting in the backyard. There's just a handful of us. And there was this sense of like, there was a mood of like, not joy, but we were laughing a little bit. We were laughing at like, the trivialness of life and the uncertainty of life and the temporary nature of life. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends made a comment. He was like, do you think if we didn't understand this philosophy that there would be laughing in this backyard right now? Like if we didn't understand like truly, or at least try to understand the philosophy that Krishna has taught us, do you think that there would be laughing right now? Because like, if you don't understand the philosophy, death can be paralyzing. Completely paralyzing for so many people, right? But there was this notion of like, yes, this temporary world is so temporary. And literally like our friend passed away hours ago. And we understand that this body was given to us for a little bit of time and then it moves on. And really digesting that philosophy. And literally what Krishna is saying right here is being even-minded during pleasant and non-pleasant events. That's our saving grace, you know?
Yeah.
Otherwise, things in life can torment us and paralyze us if we don't truly understand the philosophy. If we let our emotions take a hold of us and bring us to the depths of depression, you know?
Yeah.
Like, being even-minded and controlling our mind and controlling our senses and, like, understanding the difference between the body and the soul, like, that is literally what can save us, you know? During pleasant and unpleasant events. And we saw it firsthand with the death of our really close friend.
Yeah. It's so true. There would not be laughter, I think, if you guys didn't have a way to frame it.
Yeah. It's like we relied so much on this philosophy. And to be honest, I never had, like, my father passed away, but I wasn't too close to him. So this has been the real person who I was close with,
the first person
that I was actually close to, that I really that I loved, and that I saw his body in front of me, you know? Like, I was in the hospital room, like obviously I was crying, but I also understood what was happening. And then one of my friends said, you should recite chapter 15 of the Bhagavad Gita to him. And the moment I started reading the Gita, I started bawling, like just bawling. But I also understood what Krishna was saying in chapter 15. And we haven't gotten there yet, but literally, like, I was reading to him and I was understanding, like, oh, he's in a better place. I know where he is now. Krishna has told me where he is and where he's going. And so I can feel secure in that. So it wasn't tears of sadness. It was tears of realization of Krishna's words. You know?
Beautiful. Whew.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, somebody say something else right now. I'm going to cry.
We're both just staring at
him. I know.
I think also for the, it was very, I've seen other people die. I've been in the room. Like, I've seen other, but this was the first unexpected death for me, right? Where we oftentimes think, oh, someone 70, 80, you know, even 60, if they were not healthy for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Okay, we understand, but 37 hit really differently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It showed really, one, how quickly things can change, two, how temporary life can be.
Yeah.
I mean, this one lifetime, to put it that way. And so that's so beautiful that one, someone told you to read chapter 15 and then you were able to get comfort out of that in that moment. We did, like, I don't know. Yeah, we all did it, actually. We read different chapters for him. Is that the one you were talking about? Or this is a different instance?
Oh, no. I was in the room reading
chapter 15.
Reading chapter 15 to his body. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like, in the hospital room.
Heavy.
Crying, heavy. Like, profusely. Just like, but I also, like, crying out of, like, comfort that, like, Krishna's got him. I understand the philosophy a little bit to know that, like, his soul has moved on, and people, some, like, his wife was chanting Hare Krishna in his ear at the moment he passed, and, like, that's what he remembered, and that brought me comfort. But literally, like, reading to his body and, like, understanding Krishna's words, that gave me the even-mindedness, actually, in pleasant and unpleasant events. Like, Krishna consciousness gives me the balance, the equipoise, the everything that I need to keep my mental state balanced, because if we don't have this philosophy, we would be so lost, you know?
Totally.
So, yeah, that's true. There's no way to be balanced in a situation like this if you don't have a philosophical backbone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
go ahead.
No, yeah, just picturing you there reading to his body and thinking how many realizations, like, it really is the Gita coming to life. Like, I was just picturing that. And thinking a lot of the people on the first night of kirtans that they did, a lot of the people were talking about how he's good. His soul is going back to where it belongs. The ones that are suffering here are us who are left behind. And how many people can have that perspective on death if they don't have this philosophy? Like, yippee-hi-yo for them, you know? Like, that's almost kind of a funny way. It would feel backwards to most people.
Right. And for me, it was also like, there was a lot of moments in which I sat there and I cried for his wife and for his kid, in the sense of, like, oh, Krishna, like, what's the plan here? This is so difficult. I understand that our friend is fine, that he's taken care of. He has his journey, whatever way he's going, and you have his back. He was a scholar. He was very devoted to, you know, the Bhagavad Gita and all these things. And we could say so many wonderful words, but what about those left behind? And when I was in that moment, I remember thinking about that verse, like, you should not lament neither for the living nor the dead.
I thought about that verse
too. Oh, man. Yeah. And ooh, I was like, Krishna,
what
an intense, but the fact that we have that verse, right? Yeah. The fact that we have that
knowledge. Say it again. What is it?
We can, we should lament neither for the living nor the death.
Yeah. Don't.
Dead.
Yeah.
And so it's just, we have that knowledge to help us cope and help us, you know, balance and be, what was this?
Equipoised
for sure, but steadfast or steady, or what was the word that we were just using?
Even-mindedness,
right? Yep. Like, to in one hand think, oh, Krishna, like, what is to be of her situation? And then the other hand be like, maybe Krishna has a plan here. We cannot lament. There's a reason. Obviously, it's like really harsh to say this to someone who doesn't understand the philosophy, right? Like, how can you... Even you almost can't say it out loud to anybody else in that moment, maybe even.
Totally.
But in your mind, it can kind of give peace. Like, Krishna has a plan. There's a reason for this. I should not lament. Yeah. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Like, and kudos to like our friend who died. His wife is one of our best friends. Mm. And she even knew that the passing of her husband, because her husband was like the spiritual pillar of the family. Mm-hmm. And she made this comment about like, how like, now this is my test to make sure I'm spiritually strong for my son.
Wow. To view that as a test.
Yeah.
Like, imagine that. Like, she's like, this is, my opportunity, this my is test, my, opportunity. My, like, it is up to me now to like, you know?
Yeah. And like, imagine the spiritual strength that it is needed to say that within a couple of days of your husband passing away.
Yeah.
Like, she is so strong and like spiritually understands what she needs to do now.
I mean, honestly, if we were to talk about her and everything, like, I could say so many things. Like, the way she handled it, the way that she explained it to her 2-year-old.
Yeah.
Impressive. Like, this child doesn't really understand what's happening, but has a really clear understanding of the body, the soul, and like Krishna, and like just in general, like Goloka. Yeah. Like, I mean, Krishna is giving her so much strength right now, and like so much intelligence to deal with the situation, because I was thoroughly impressed.
She explained it to him, right? Like a couple days after it happened. And then he was explaining it to his friend on the playground. And he said to his friend Jonah, he was like, oh, yeah, my daddy's with Krishna now.
Yeah. He also, I took him to the temple, just me and him, the 2-year-old. And we stopped by someone who had a little girl who might have been like 8. And the little girl goes, why did your daddy die? And my whole body, I was like, oh, Krishna, like, what do I do in this situation? And this 2-year-old turns around and goes, because he went to Krishna. Aww. And then just kept walking.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, he handled that better than me.
Wow.
Like,
what an elevated soul. Yeah. Like a very mature soul.
Krishna Chaitanya.
And he's probably like he's probably have done this before. That 2-year-old was born into a pious family.
Yeah.
The friend who died was a very scholarly person. He was so well versed in scripture and like so smart. And the fact that 2-year-old was born into that family, like, Krishna has all the, like, he knew the whole plan. Krishna knows the plan. He knows exactly what's happening. We just need to trust that Krishna's plan is always going to be the right plan for us.
Mm. Say that last line again one more time, because that's so important.
And we just have to trust that Krishna's plan is always going to be the right plan for us.
Ooh. Yeah. And I think when something happens so close to home, like, we hear about death all the time and we think Krishna has a plan. But when it happens to someone so close to us, like, what's the plan, Krishna? And I remember when I first heard of it, what really hit me was like, I really said, what is the plan, Krishna? I thought two things. I thought, first, he has a wife and a 2-year-old. What? And then I thought, and he survived the accident that we were all in just 5 years ago, just to die so little bit of time later.
He was in the van with us.
Part of me couldn't wrap my head around that like, he survived that accident. So I thought, he's here. He's good. He's not meant to leave. What? It made me almost like frustrated to think, what is the plan? And that's when, like, Priya, you were talking about the verse has come to mind. And it's like, there is a plan. There has to be a plan. And the philosophy kicks back in, even though it's hard because it's so close to home.
Yeah. And Chandler, we were talking about this on the car ride down to our friend's house. One of these 12 nights was like, he was in the van with us and he was hurt pretty bad. right? Mm-hmm. But he survived. Mm-hmm. And then we were like, Christian, well, what's the point of all of this? And like a few years later, he had a son. Mm-hmm. And that son is a very Krishna conscious soul. Oh my God. And will be raised as a very Krishna conscious yeah. soul. And like maybe Krishna's plan yeah. the whole time was to make sure that he became a father mm-hmm. so that he could give a little bit of knowledge
yeah.
to his son. You know,
and then yeah. he completed that. And then Krishna wanted him somewhere else. His yeah. time was done.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we can't tell, but definitely those things are true. His son is like constantly chanting. He chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to the ABC tune.
What
Hare
is it?
Krishna, Hare Krishna. Like, he's just like, I don't even know. It's really
so cute.
And he does it in front of all his friends and all anyone around all yeah. the time. Like constantly. I'm not talking about like whenever you ask him to do it. He's like always chanting. Like yeah. I was on the phone with him and I was like, okay, can I talk to your mom now? He's like, okay. And then in the background you can hear Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You like just like hear him like just chanting. So and I'm like, wow, 2 years old.
Yeah. So maybe he was meant to be a father and give birth to this beautiful, yeah. beautiful soul.
And death is just a change of service. I was remembering that Kadamba Kana Maharaj said that. That always helps when you don't understand the plan. Well, they just had a change of service then. Their soul had to continue.
That's really beautiful. Sure.
That's lovely.
Well, the next one is constant and unalloyed devotion to me. So, right, Prabhupada says devotional service to Krishna without deviation. What it means is we engage ourselves in the 9 processes of devotional service, which are, to recap, chanting, hearing, worshiping, offering respects, etc., as we went over in the 9th chapter. So we just need to do that.
Yeah.
Any addition?
Yeah. I was just looking up the word unalloyed. Unalloyed means pure, like unalloyed metal, unalloyed copper. Mm. It means pure, like in its purest state.
Yes. Right. So yeah, no ulterior motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one is interesting because it said, aspiring to live in a solitary place. Mm. And this one also will continue, detachment from the general mass of people. So I looked and I actually like how Prabhupada makes 2 points and both points start with the word naturally. Because when these things happen, it will be a natural process. He says, naturally, when one is adapted to the spiritual way of life, he'll not want to mix with materialistic men. Now, this might sound harsh, but let's apply this into a real life scenario. The higher up you go in your spiritual life, are you still going to want to hang around people who just want to party and drink and do all those things?
And even if it wasn't those things, even if it was other kinds of things, like for example, just like someone who's like, I want the biggest house or the car, like even if it isn't like vices, but even just material desires, it's still not really appealing if you understand there's no purpose in collecting things.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the deeper you go in your own path, it sounds a little less extreme, and it just makes sense. I want to be with people who are also striving to evolve and to connect with Krishna. And yeah, because Prabhupada says if you hang out with materialistic men or women, that would just go against your grain. Mm. And then Prabhupada says, we could test yourself to see how far you're inclined to live in a solitary place without unwanted association. Mm. So that's kind of his alternative to like, better be in alone than in bad company.
That's
true. So it's not like he's saying go into penance and live in solitude all your life. No, just better to be alone than in bad company.
Mm. I love that.
Yeah. And then his second point, he says, naturally a devotee doesn't have taste for unnecessary sporting or cinema going or enjoying some social function because he understands that these are simply a waste of time. Now, with our group of devotee friends, we like to do, I don't know, we might go to the beach or whatever it is that maybe is not strictly...
Do you say mundane things?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we do.
But it's a sliding scale because I don't know. If you were to hang out with people who aren't on this path, maybe the conversations that you have in these places would be differently. But I feel always when we're like, I don't know, like-minded on the same path, there's some deeper bond there that even if we're whatever, taking a walk in a park, doing something that's not going to a movie, I don't know. It's different when you feel like when I'm hanging out with you guys versus someone who is just totally absorbed in materialism, because at least there's this understanding with us that this isn't the end goal. Mm-hmm. Come on. We know there's something more, you know?
Yeah. I also think like there's, this is the part where it's like the modern yogi, right? Where like realistically speaking, we're still in this world.
Right.
We still have desires.
Right.
We still have anartas. We still have all these things to work through. And when we find like-minded people and we bond with them, even outside of spiritual activities, we're creating closer bonds that then lead us to this, mm-hmm. right? Because if I maybe hadn't gone, quote unquote, to the movies with you, let's say, I don't even have that example, but gone to the movies with you, maybe our relationship wouldn't have naturally developed as much if we didn't spend time in multiple circumstances, and then this podcast wouldn't be happening. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that that is the ultimate goal. I'm not saying that that's the highest standard, mm-hmm. but I do think that in modern society, it's just fine like-minded people and just encourage and push each other to be spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Priya, I think there's more to that point than maybe you even realize. And it's so true because even it made me think of TKG, Tamal Krishna Goswami, my parents' spiritual master, who was like Srila Prabhupada's right-hand man. He did something similar to that, that when he went to SMU because he wanted to get a degree.
SMU is a university?
Yeah. It's a very, it's a good university in Texas. And he went there to continue his studies, and all of his professors so respected him. He would go in his saffron attire. They respected him so much. They invited him to like watch the Sunday football game. And when he would go there, he wouldn't talk about Krishna consciousness because he felt that I need to form friendships, and friendships with these people come first, and then everything else will follow, you know? Yep. So for him, he wasn't going because he was actually interested in football. That was the last of his concerns, but he was valuing those connections, fortifying those connections. And that's also in a way, I don't like the word preaching, but like forming connections, because it's ultimately about connections.
For sure. We're all looking for love and we're all looking for connection. And so therefore creating these connections and then connecting it to Krishna, ultimate goal.
Mm. Yeah. So I think it's fine engaging in these things when we keep in mind the bigger picture.
Yeah. Even like me and you, Shamli, we went to a concert like a few weeks ago.
We did go to a concert.
To the Hollywood Bowl, Sarah Bareilles. And like,
there was tears, laughter.
It was great. But like, we also like, we were telling each other about the material problems that we have in our lives. But like, when you have spiritual friendships, you can give advice or like even like help someone navigate it through a spiritual lens. And you did that for me. It's like just helping navigate through a spiritual lens.
I think you
lens.
Did that for me by the end.
Oh, look at that. This guy over
so
here.
Okay? But it's true. It's true. So no matter what place you are, then you have that connection. Mm-hmm.
Continue. All right. Yeah, wow. I'm jealous I didn't get invited to Sarah Bareilles.
I put it on my Insta story. Anyways, let's take that offline. Okay.
Okay. So accepting the importance of self-realization, and I'm going to read the next one, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. Alrighty. So Srila Prabhupada says that there are so many different types of philosophers and theologians and all sorts of things. But according to the Gita, one should really focus our research in the nature of the soul. We can be researching all these things that don't ultimately matter, but research the soul. We should make research into understanding the self. And as far as self-realization is concerned, we should, as far as bhakti yoga goes, what is it? Oh, it's clearly stated here that bhakti yoga is the way to go. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we're questioning any matters on devotion, we look at the relationship between the super soul and the individual soul. Oh, and you remember how we were talking about, though there's two souls within, Srila Prabhupada says the individual soul and the super soul cannot be one. They are two, at least not in the bhakti conception, the devotional conception of life. And I love that because it takes two to have a relationship. So the devotional conception of life is our relationship with Krishna. There has to be two. It cannot be one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Beautiful. And then we're at the very end of the list. Prabhupada repeats again. Oh, interesting. He started with humility. And even though it's not on the list, the last big paragraph is again about humility. That to me is like he's
full circle.
Full circle, because he
connected it back together. It's like a summary.
Right. So he's saying beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realization of the supreme truth, the absolute personality of Godhead, this process is just like a staircase, beginning from the ground floor and going up to the top floor. Aww. So people are going to be at different points of the staircase, right? He said so many people might be on the first floor, second, third, but unless you reach the top floor, and that's understanding Krishna, we are at the lowest stage of knowledge. So we want to seek guidance from people who are on that top floor.
I love that. I also kind of love that the fact that it's a staircase. Still a staircase, because it does, like he was saying, right? What like he was saying, if we just have devotion for Krishna, all the other things are fulfilled. Because if you're at the top of the ladder, you've already seen everything else.
Absolutely. Right?
But if you are doing the other things, like, wait, what was the other way around?
No, yeah, you fulfill that.
Yeah, yeah. Everything else falls into place.
Yeah, I'm thinking what was the opposite. But anyways, but you understand the gist. If you do one of them, it doesn't mean you actually understand the whole philosophy. So.
Right. So he emphasizes we can't want to compete with God. Someone might think that sounds extreme, but whenever we think I'm the best at this or the best at that, we're in a way thinking ourselves to be all that. So we can't make spiritual advancement when we think ourselves to be gods. And so we need humility. So basically he says the beginning of knowledge, therefore, is humility.
Oof, I love it.
Amazing. Okay, so basically all of this is what knowledge is, right? And that was, so like humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, all the things that we just described are the essence of what knowledge is, the absolute truth, right? And so in the last two ones, we learned not only what full knowledge is, but also everything we're comprised of. Is that kind of a summary of everything?
Yes.
Okay, fascinating.
Yeah, I love it.
Can't wait to learn more.
This is great. I love this so much. Please join us next time for chapter 13, text number 13.
Oh, 13.
Bye.
See you next time.
Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.